Mr. Cutlets, Mr. Cutlets, when you swing around that pork chop, I get a whiff of heaven every time you pass my doorstop. With the chicken and the brisket and the marrow and the giblets, Mr. Cutlets, spend some time with me. I know it's crazy, but it's true.
Hi, I'm Josh Ozersky. This is the Mr. Cutlets Show. I'm the national restaurant editor for City Search, and I edit our New York food blog, The Feed Bag. I'm here with my friend Kate Weiss.
Hello.
Who is a, I would say, a seasoned observer of the restaurant business.
Indeed. I have eaten out a lot. It's been great.
And basically, you know, I've gotten away, Kate, from being so meat-centric in my writings and my studies. Like, for a long time, it was only about meats and edible animals. And now I feel that I need to be out there more, you know, and like be like the Walter Winchell of the restaurant business.
Actually,
you know?
Touch a vegetable.
No, well, listen.
No.
I had a vegetable yesterday. I had a
vegetable.
Cucumbers. No, it was a little one. I cut it up with an onion. Now, Kate, I am getting away from meat.
I don't know. I don't think you'll ever give up the meat obsession.
Well, you're right, because in fact, what I was about to say is that although I'm not so much studying and writing about meat, I actually happened to find like an amazing piece of meat yesterday.
Oh.
I went to Fairway, and there was a piece of dry-aged rib steak. And, like, you know, Kate, how the USDA, like, has all the categories, prime, choice, mm-hmm. standard, so forth, select, cutter, canner, the on down the line. And what gets called prime is, like, frequently, you know, like, that is very thin soup.
Subprime.
Choice,
meat.
Like, what they call prime now, they used to call choice.
Ah.
Everything got, like, it was like when they put the Regents exams down, mm-hmm. and, like, a 40 was a passing
inflated
grade.
Inflated grading.
Yes, it was social promotion of meat.
Raw.
And so, you know, to get that really great, incredible prime steak, you know, what looks almost like the Japanese steak or the Japanese breeds, the Wagyu breeds, you generally have to go to a handful of restaurants, like Mineta Tavern, the famous mm-hmm. steak at Mineta Tavern, Prime House New York, anyway, other places that have really, really high-powered steak programs. This was even better than those steaks. This steak was like a Kobe steak. It was $20, was dry-aged. I literally took pictures of it. I'm going to put up on the feedback tomorrow.
And what made it so good? It was its aging, or was it also the marbling? I hear this talk of marbling. Tell me more.
Well, Kate, as you know, intramuscular fat is the elixir, the essence, the prime mover of all beefly sensations. And in fact, you could even go so far as to say, like, that the muscle tissue is inert, is an inactive ingredient. It's just along for the ride. You know, the way I think about it is, you know, the fat is the meat. And the meat is the vegetable.
This from a man who says he is now moving away from meat.
No, but think about it, though. Okay, the fat is the meat.
God. It sounds like a heart attack.
And the meat is the vegetable. Anyway, the micro marbling was incredibly rich. That's what determines prime. The so-called copious marbling is the language the USDA gives its inspectors to go by. I mean, it was not like the most extreme Kobe steaks is like reverse marbling, like it's mm-hmm. red on white, which is totally disgusting. It just melts away. But like this is really, really profoundly, richly marbled to the point that like even overcooked, it's still, I mean, it's so possessed. There's so much kind of like liquidy electricity in it.
Transcendent meat for you.
It also was corn fed. Mm. You know, everything now, the fashion is this grass fed meat you've heard about.
I know you don't like that.
Well, the Porsche makes it at
you know, it seems egg. Like a nice image because you picture these cows frolicking. I like that image. I don't like the cows being like
I don't think a cow
force-fed corn cobs. That's a horrible image.
Listen, force-fed corn cobs, that is quite an image. I don't know.
You know
if
what
I mean?
I don't know if I even
really want to cope with it. But
grass is really not brutal.
It's not brutal. It's gentle. It's praiseworthy. It's noble. It's what the animal was meant to eat, and it makes bad steak. Like, steak is the product of...
It's just not enough fat.
Not evil, but like... Well, you know, you can feed an animal a lot of a rich diet with a lot of different... First of all, any animal that goes, like, in South America and just walks around eating, like, prairie grass is mm-hmm. going to be a horrible Karen Carpenter of an animal. You know what I mean? So, like, an animal that eats a very rich diet of sweet alfalfa and, like, a whole different... What they call grass-fed is really a whole sort of, you know... Like a botanical garden of different kinds
like
of
the seven
clover
grains.
And, yeah, right. No, not grains.
All
it's
grass.
Right. Grass, like it could be clover, it can be alfalfa, all these sweet things, which can make it good, but you're never going to get that marbling without grain feeding.
But that sounds much more interesting than corn. How many kinds of corn can that
There's
cow
only
eat?
One in horrible industrial corn that they feed those
And that's
animals.
What you prefer, though.
Yes. It's not my fault. I don't prefer it. It's just better. Like...
Well, okay.
But no, Kate, you know, I mean, what I'm saying is it's sweeter. You know, the corn is sweet. That's why it's useful. That's a cheap sweetener. That's mm-hmm. it's
yeah, that's
one of its purposes.
A lot of documentaries.
And meat, especially prime meat, the one that's inevitably described as being buttery and so forth, having that kind of rich, mellow, lush mouthfeel, is generally has a kind of a mellow sweetness to it. Hmm. And I think that that's something you can only ever get with, and you'll never get the marbling. The marbling's the main thing anyway, and the marbling you may say you like the taste better of grass versus the mm-hmm. sweet taste of corn, but you'll never get that kind of micro marbling in a grass fed animal ever.
What role though does the massaging play? If you massage
massaging the eater, the chef,
is that a good role? No, massaging the cow, because. From what I've understood, Kobe beef it's often from cows that are really massaged.
Well, you know what? That's one of the great propaganda
efforts that one,
ever. No, really, it's amazing because, like, the most horrific, the image I think that most has energized anti-meat activists in America is the idea of the poor, pathetic, penned veal.
Yep.
Who never sees the light, can't move, can't touch its mother and everything.
I don't eat a lot of veal because of this.
Well, if you took a veal...
A veal. This is the problem right here. If I took a veal, tell me more, freaking animal advocate.
If you...
God.
If you had a veal in a little pen, in a little stall...
A calf.
That it couldn't move,
mm-hmm.
the way you would keep... its body from cramping up under those unnatural conditions, those diabolical conditions, was by massaging it. That's why they massage the Kobe animals, because they're kept in such a hellish... It's like foie gras. Like, they're basically beef foie gras. Or worse, because the foie gras animals really aren't that unhappy.
How do you know that? You don't know
that. I have been there. I saw them. I talked to them. You can see that they don't mind it that much. The lady... You know, their throats, Kate, are... Not like ours. Like, when you see the lady shove the tube down the throat, you're like, oh, wouldn't it feel bad if someone did it to you?
Well, they don't have a gag reflex, right? Or do they?
No. And their throat is meant to have, like, spiny fish go down it whole.
Yeah.
So it doesn't hurt them. They drop a certain amount of grain in, like, in 1 second, broom, it goes in. They pull the tube out. The bird doesn't even know anything's happened. Like, it doesn't struggle. It doesn't look frightened or upset.
I've got to tell you, though, this conversation is really, really making me wonder about the fairway steak. We should talk more about the meat and maybe less about the animal.
Well,
you know,
I agree. I agree, Kate, and that's something we'll have to do after the next commercial break. Hopefully, TechServe, our friends over on West 23rd Street, will have something to say about it.
Mm.
Hi, this is Josh Ozersky, a.k.a. Mr. Cutlets, on the Heritage Radio Network, sponsored by TechServe. We're back here at Roberta's in the back garden. Probably this is kind of like my favorite restaurant right now.
It's pretty good.
I mean, I'm not saying that I would rather eat here, you know, if I had a meal here versus a meal in Alto or La Bernardina or whatever, but like, this is so like the place to be and the place to
know. It's got the vibe, you know, and the sunshine.
This is what I think that, well, anyway, you know, Kate, Roberta's, one of the things they really excel in here is Italian meat cookery.
Hmm.
You don't seem to... I gather that you don't eat as much meat as you once did.
Well, as you know, I'm the daughter of a cardiologist. And you've actually met him, which was one of the best meetings I've had with my dad and anyone. Here's a man who insists that the meat is the vegetable, the fat is the meat, meeting my cardiologist's father. That was glorious.
It's like a plastic... like a breast... surgeon meeting Blair, Selma Blair.
It was epic. Yeah, definitely.
I bring this up, Kate, because I'm creating a extremely fatty new meatball.
Oh, good. I would love to write my dad about this one. Just tell me more.
At the New York Wine and Food Festival is coming up in the second week in October, mm-hmm. which is going to be the biggest convocation of demigods that the city has seen since like 2 weeks before when there was the Star Chefs Congress, mm-hmm. which is closed off to the public. So for the public, like, it doesn't get much better than the New York Wine and Food Festival. And I'm doing several things in there. I am a judge at the Rachel Ray Burger Bash, also known as the Blue Moon Burger Bash. And I'm a contestant in the meatball contest.
Man, who else is on your team?
There's a guy named Mike Chirino. Mike Chirino is a brilliant young chef. He has an underground supper club called A Razor, A Shiny Knife.
Ah, yeah.
He looks just like Serpico. if you've ever seen him. I mean, he has a beard now. He looks less like, but he looks just like Serpico. And he's a very good cook and a molecular gastronomist or whatever, so he knows about how to do things. I have the kind of idea... And we work on it together, and I do the sort of promotional self-aggrandizement aspect, mm-hmm. and he does the actual cooking aspect, you know?
And so how are the trials? Are you meeting to experiment to develop the ultimate recipe? How's it going?
We are creating a meatball super weapon.
Oh.
I've done two videos on the feedback. That's our mm-hmm. City Search's blog, of course, the-feedback.com. And basically... we are trying to reinvent the meatball. Now, you know about the melted chocolate cake they call the Valrhona. You know the Valrhona chocolate?
I do.
The molten chocolate mm-hmm. cake, something of a cliche now, really, in the dessert business. But
it's been called the Volcano, right?
The Volcano.
To make it more accessible to mainstream.
I think Domino's even has it now. I mean, it's really one of the defining desserts. Like,
it's good, too.
It's the, like, baked Alaska of its time or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, it's got a hot center. So I said, well, why not make that's the Valrhona, make Veal-rhona.
Uh-huh.
Have veal, like a little meatball, a pork meatball with a hot liquid veal center.
See, and now after all we just talked about with veal, I can't imagine how this would not be intensely gratifying.
Well, why? You mean you think that I don't like you think I take a perverse... delight in the sufferings
of little
veals?
You know what it is that because you referred to the veal instead of as a calf,
right.
as a veal, I now picture this little caged meatball being like prodded because it won't be allowed out into the sunlight. And that's
that
what
would
you're going to be serving.
You know what? If only we could do like a computer-generated imagery of that. Or we could make like a little animatronic one. A little meatball in its little pen struggle. Like a rodeo bull. Bucking in its cage before it's let out, you know?
Goodness.
Bodacious. Anyway, it's coming along very well, and it's so freaking good. It's deep fried.
Wow.
We made the veal, and we cooked down, you know, with marrow bones to enrich a tomato sauce and give that a veal basis. And then we cooked veal, and we made like a veal tomato slurry, and then Mike added gelatin to it. He's like knows about these kind of things.
Yeah.
He added gelatin, and then he put it in the freezer, But really, in the video, what we didn't show is we didn't have time to put it in the freezer, so he just poured, like, he happened to have a big keg of liquid nitrogen. So he's like, oh, I'll just pour liquid nitrogen over. Like, he opens this, like, you know, this Frankenstein machine of liquid nitrogen and pours all over it, you know. Have you ever seen, like, you've seen the effects with the smoke.
I haven't.
So
I've seen dry ice, which is not at all the same thing, right?
Well, it's like dry ice, but it's like 100 times more. It's 100 times more smoky than dry ice. It's the same principle.
Yeah.
I don't even know what it's made of. Because it's so cold, it's something like 200 degrees below zero or something.
Man.
It thinks it's boiling hot. Like, it thinks that the regular ambient room temperature is boiling.
Huh.
Do you know what I mean?
Like, flash?
It boils. It thinks that it's so hot that it boils. Because it's 200 degrees. Huh?
That's why it smokes.
That's why it smokes. Okay. But apparently it has no flavor. It's part of oxygen. Like, we're breathing it in right now. So there's no flavor. There's no effect. You could pour it right on anything you want. It's the same as pouring air on it, basically. It has,
that's
like,
crazy.
No... Yeah.
Well, then I have to ask you, though. Is there some kind of awesome pasta team that's been put together to make the spaghetti for this meatball?
Well, you know what? This is maybe a flaw in this plan, is that the meatball contest is all meatballs all the time.
No.
It's like a meatball version of a sausage fest. You know, it has a certain one-dimensional character.
Wow.
But the meatballs are going to be amazing. Michael White, Andrew Carmellini, all your top meatball men, Italian chefs, Joey Campanero, and oh my God. I mean, you name them, they're in that. And there's some non-Italian ones, too.
Yeah. Are they at all threatened by you?
They are naturally threatened by
because
me,
you're
yes.
an amazing cook, but most people don't know that. They just know that you write about other people's food.
I am a good cook, but I'm not a good enough cook to outcook a talented professional
chef.
Well,
we'll see.
The fix is in anyway. I already know it. This is being sponsored by La Frida.
Mm. Oh, so, well then, Golden Child.
No, but I'm not a customer of La Frida.
Yeah, but
it's
going to
be somebody that
PR
actually
person.
Is. Well, I'm not their PR person.
I know. I'm it's just actually a friend because of the their house. Stuff is good. I know.
I mean,
I'm just friends of a different meat man. And
oh,
so
that's
I
right.
Come
you're friends
from
with DeBraga.
The opposite camp.
Well, you know, listen. There's plenty of room for. There's lots of meat eaten in New York, and there's no reason why anybody should monopolize the meat trade. I have a very highest regard for DeBraga, Masters, Purveyors. You know, all the let me tell you something. The steak at Fairway, this guy named Ray Vincenzi, I think his name is the butcher for Fairway. He's really a butcher for a big operation like that is really a purchasing agent because the meat cutters cut up the meat, but the really hard thing is to get a hold of it. It's like, you know, you have to really wrangle. It's like it's like being an agent and trying to get like Megan Fox. As you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So he got this stuff. It's better than anything I've seen from any of the restaurants. You know? I mean, the meat trade is just like, it's tough, man. It's hard to get that very tip-top stuff when it comes to beef. But other stuff like chicken, and we were going to talk about the fried chicken, I think.
Yeah.
Like Bell and Evans fried chicken, or a good Bell and Evans chicken is as good as you can get. Hmm. Basic, you know, supermarket brand.
But what kind of meat are you going to be using in the meatball? It's all going to have to be by La Frida, right? Because they're sponsoring it?
Well, they're the sponsor, so everybody's using their meat.
Yeah, but that's going to be some really good meatballs.
Well, mine is not a beef meatball, though, so I'm not using the La Frida beef mix.
Do they have veal?
They have I mean, it's all the big meat purveyors
all the
have all the different you know animals. It's pork and breadcrumbs around a veal gel liquid center. Which
that's
is
crazy.
And then we roll it in a simple panko batter, egg wash with then we're going to get a little bit of veal dust.
It sounds like the soup dumpling meatballs,
it's like a meat soup dumpling.
Yeah.
That's what it
there
is.
You
it's
go.
A solid version of a soup dumpling.
I'm signing
or
up.
Freshen up.
I think my dad might even go for that.
Is he going to come to it?
He'd have to like eat 10 times the weight in celery or something to make up for it.
You know
it,
what? I mean, come on. Listen, let's not get crazy. All right, I'm Josh Ozersky, Mr. Cutlets, City Search restaurant editor, and this is the Heritage Radio Network. We're here at Roberta's in Bushwick, and we'll see you back in a minute. Hi, I'm Josh Ozersky, a.k.a. Mr. Cutlets. I'm here with Kate Weiss.
Hello.
A restaurant publicist and an observer of the scene. You're not a publicist for any restaurants right now, though.
I know.
Lest people think that you're up here misrepresenting.
No, I have no allegiances. It's wonderful.
Right. And actually, I think we may have been talking a little bit about chicken a few minutes ago.
Where the best chicken was, how to get it, how to fry it.
This is a very big topic now. This is a hot thing. I had last time when I was here, Carolyn Baines, who was the Pies and Thighs lady. Pies and Thighs, I don't know, the fried chicken was so good there. And I didn't think it should be good because I've always been in sort of a datum or like a really almost like a religious creed that deep fried chicken could never be really great. Like, to make great fried chicken, you have to cook it in a cast iron pan or something like it. Or something else, like a pressure, the Colonel uses a pressure cooker, and that at Perry Street they have this elaborate thing using a seltzer bottle.
Oh, wow.
Well, it's a complicated aeration procedure that involves grilling and frying and deep frying some kind of batter, whatever. The point is, you know, how a deep fried chicken could be so good, I never knew. And now it's back here at Roberta's. She's here serving that chicken and her delicious little biscuits.
Now, Pies and Thighs is legendary. So.
Pies and Thighs is legendary, but you know, Kate, that neither Pies and Thighs biscuits, well, neither their fried chicken nor especially their biscuits are the end all and be all of Williamsburg fried chicken and biscuits.
Oh, yeah? Where else then?
Well, we happen to have with us here in the studio your friend Porsche.
Oh, my friend Porsche.
Who is the last name still eludes me, Porsche? You're like Charo or somebody.
It's Porsche, Porsche.
You're only known as one name.
I'm like Sting.
This is my fault.
Or Prince. You know.
Prince, Sting, maybe.
I don't know who else. Could
I don't know.
I think you're Lou Porsche.
Bega,
Porsche. Maybe.
I'm Porsche. Porsche. Yeah.
What is your last name, Porsche?
My last name is Porsche.
Oh, what's your first
name?
My
first name is Michael. It's a little bit of a disappointment.
He looks like a Michael.
Yeah.
All right, now Porsche.
Full of vanilla, but you know.
You're a cook. At Egg.
I am.
And you make you feel that you have a pretty strong claim to making one of the top fried chickens there.
You know, we have a very, very excellent fried chicken, but I have to say everything I learned, I did learn from Stephen Tanner, who did come from Pies and Thighs. So.
Okay, so you're cooking essentially
cooking this chicken you got.
This makes
Pies
a mockery of my whole introduction.
However,
but what do you do that's better?
What's better? Maybe the biscuit program?
Well,
is the biscuit program a little better?
I think my biscuits are better. And our fried chicken, we brine it for 24 to 48 hours, but no longer than that. And then all we do is we take it out of the brine, we pour seltzer water on top of the chicken.
Oh, really?
Uh-huh.
And I don't know, I'm revealing our big secret here. So we'll just dip it in a Cambro of seltzer water. We'll throw it in flour and salt and pepper. We'll toss it.
No
we'll
egg.
Just, no egg. Just seltzer
no
water.
No milk.
No.
Seltzer water.
Just seltzer water, and then flour with salt and pepper mix. And
it's
then
really
just
good.
Very good. Now, is it a... What kind of a chicken is it?
It's a cage-free... You know, I have to admit, it's an organic chicken.
Well, there's nothing to be ashamed about that.
But, you know, it's... And the thing that was always funny about Pies and Thighs was, you know, they used, you know, beef from, you know, wherever, and chicken from wherever. And that was just kind of Stephen Tanner's very, like... sort of old school rock star, like, I don't really care where this stuff comes from, but I'm going to make it taste good. And that was great. And then he came to Egg, and sort of my boss kind of made him...
Well, there's a philosophy.
Yeah, my boss is sort of more of the farm-to-table sort of ethos, so he sort of had to be forced to adapt to that, but...
Well, you're called Egg. I think where your products are from would probably be.
Yeah, that would probably be important. So,
that's kind of like the movement. I mean, I sometimes express skepticism about some of its more sanctimonious performance, but I recognize that is, and that's what's one of the things that's sort of the whole ethos of this place. Like that arugula, you know, they talk about like there's always like Alice Waters shaping it. Like, well, listen, anybody can grow an arugula. They got milk crates on top of this garage we're in.
Yeah.
With arugulas in it. It's delicious. They put it on a plate with, you know, balsamic vinegar or whatever. His meats, I think, happen to be extraordinary.
Yeah.
But as far as the fried chicken goes, I am going to eat a major fried chicken. There's a major player in fried chicken.
Is this Lo Conde Verde?
Yes.
Yeah, I knew you were
going
to talk about
that. I'm going on Monday night, tomorrow night.
I need to hear about this. I'm very excited about
now,
it, too.
Now, for our listeners who aren't devotees of the fried chicken circuit, the fried chicken circles, Andrew Carmelini, the chef proprietor of Lo Conde Verde restaurant in the Greenwich Hotel, was the chef at Cafe Balud and is considered to be a true master. Porsche, you'll agree that he's kind of a chef's chef.
Yeah.
Like in the chef community, his name commands much more respect than a lot of more well-known chefs.
Sure. Absolutely.
And one of the reasons for that respect is his absolute virtuosity of almost every field and ethnicity. And, he was classically trained French cook who was Daniel Balud's right-hand man. Then he opened an Italian restaurant and got 3 stars selling spaghetti. He makes tacos in his spare time, and now this fried chicken is what he loves American stuff. And the fried chicken, in fact, was one of the house favorites, off-the-menu favorites at Cafe
right.
Balud. So now he's making it. I know how it is, but I'm not allowed to. I know what he does, but I'm not allowed to talk about it. But it's a very radical program.
Really?
He just gave away all the egg secrets. We don't get
those
any
are his
of
own
this.
Secrets.
Yeah, those are my secrets.
Oh, man.
I heard there was a lot of Old Bay seasoning involved.
No,
that's
I don't
all
know.
I knew.
You know, if there is, more's the pity.
Porsche, yeah, you're not a fan of that.
Well, to me, it's such a distinctive flavor.
Yeah.
You know what they used to say about painters? I heard once a painter, a very serious painter, modern art, Museum of Modern Art, permanent collection painter. And he talked about one of his lesser rivals, and he said contemptuously, he paints out of the tube. Because the idea is that a real painter should always create his own colors. And so for a professional chef to use a spice mix, a commercially available spice mix, especially one as commonly used and with a distinctive enough character as that.
But what about something like panko?
Paco's just like great breadcrumbs. It's just like ultimate breadcrumbs. Like,
but you don't think you should have to make your own breadcrumbs then?
Oh, you mean for fried chicken?
Yeah, take it back and back, then make your own bread.
Well, if I was Japanese, I would use panko or something. I don't think that the people who make the traditional southern chicken never had breadcrumbs on it.
No.
It was just flour. It goes in the milk, and then it goes in the flour, and then it goes in the lard or oil . Isn't that about right?
Yeah, that's about right.
But I'm just wondering for the argument against the Bay, the Old Bay, if it's about the fact that it's already pre-packaged and put together. I mean, you could make every single ingredient you use. You have to make it. I mean, like the cookbook, every single thing you have to do yourself.
Well, I know. Well, look at there was that guy in Queens who actually, after 40 years of trying, successfully recreated the Colonel's recipe.
Yeah.
He found the 11 secret herbs and spices.
That's some fried chicken.
Let these guys do that. No, but Carmelini is, I guarantee you, as with the chicken at Momofuku, like, the Old Bay is no way the main thing.
No,
it's
I'm
a
sure
lot
it's
of technique
not.
Goes into something like that. By the way, I don't know, have you ever eaten in Dovetail?
No, I have not.
Dude, I ate in Dovetail 2 nights ago. This is apropos of nothing.
This is a David Burke restaurant.
No,
yes.
That's Fishtail.
Okay, I'm
Dovetail
sorry.
Is John Fraser. It's a 3-star restaurant.
It's upper
it
West
is
Side.
So good.
Really?
This guy is such a serious cook. I had like gnocchi with the last of the summer truffles or is it the first of the winter truffles? Anyway, it was so good.
Some Equinox
and an amazing halibut and his lamb tongue thing. Just, you know, you really, you can get awestruck when you just think about like just how good the fried chicken can be. That has a fairly low ceiling. I mean, it is, unless you're going out into outer space aesthetically, like Perry Street, it's just going to be really good fried chicken.
Wait, now what do they do at Perry Street?
Well, Perry Street's where they're using the aerated foam from the charger. They use the with the whippets, you know, the one that, the ISI whippet charger. Anyway, I tell you, the wonderful, and Harold's stuff over at Perilla. It's just, we live in a great, Kate, we live in a great meat city. I don't know what to tell you.
Best city, best, and some of the vegetables, pretty good,
some
too.
Some of the vegetables are good, too. I'm told,
just gotta say.
I'm told, you're like the Lorax who speak for the vegetables. I'm Josh Ozersky. I'd like to thank TechSir for supporting us. And this is the Heritage Radio Network with the Mr. Cutlet Show.
Mr. Cutlet, when you swing around that pork chop, I get a whiff of heaven every time you pass my doorstop, with the chicken and the brisket and the marrow and the giblets.